scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by all Aguilla. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers.
Okay, happy Friday, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. It is Friday, March 15th. Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts. Steinberg and Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. Hello, Vicks.
Hey, buddy. How's your day going?
It is going well.
It's yes.
Gorgeous. And we're underway this hour on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Simplify your life with a security ecosystem. Go to CalgaryLockAndSafe.com to request a security audit and get a tailored solution. Lots to get to this hour on the program. Looking forward to another good hour of Flames talk. And let's kick it off by going inside hockey for Calgary Co-op, because this hockey season, support local. Find your all-time classics and locally brewed beers. Visit your local Calgary Co-op wine, spirits, beer today. That was cool to see from that man on Thursday night. Dustin Wolf with a heck of a night. I fear for people as a whole, and Flames fans as a whole, how often they're going to be hearing Wolf howls as Dustin's career continues. It's so on the nose, and yet how can you not?
Do you do it in the press box? I'm willing to admit that I do. Julian McKenzie sits beside me
once in a while.
It's fun. It's a blast.
After a big stop, I'll turn to Logan and I'll give him a little, I can't do
exactly.
It right now. The voice is still not 100%. It's better than it has been in more than a week, so I'm just grateful for that. But, there's going to be a whole lot more of this as we move forward. But, look, Flames played well. More on that a little bit later on this hour. But I wanted to kick off this hour by talking Dustin Wolf, because it was neat to see him bounce back. It was neat to see him have a much better outing compared to his last start, because that last start was miserable. It was the 6-3 loss to San Jose, and I think that stung him. I think for the first time, maybe in his entire career, the result of a game shook him a little bit and just kind of, you know, stuck with him longer than it normally would. And we're talking about one of the mentally toughest human beings, let alone 22-year-olds I've ever been around in the sport. Like, nothing phases this guy, but that phased him temporarily, I think, anyway. And even talking to some people, even some of the coaching staff, that one stung him. He didn't play very well. Kevin Woodley talked about it with us on Thursday's show about how completely out of position he was, wasn't set,
wasn't smooth.
Just everything was off that game. And so he gets into the game in the third period against Colorado on Tuesday. He's clean, doesn't face a lot of action, but he does what he needs to, shuts the door in a 6-2 loss. And then you could tell right from puck drop on Thursday against Vegas that he was dialed. And I give the Flames a ton of credit for how they played in front of him, especially in the first 40 minutes. Wolf barely had to work in that first 40 minutes in terms of big time stops. Vegas was very, very punchless almost all night. But there was one stop that he made in that first 40 minutes of play before we got to the third period when he made his biggest stops. There was one stop that he made, I believe it was on Vegas's second period power play, and I think it was Shea Theodore who got sprung on kind of a short 2-on-1. And the chance that the Vegas player got, I think it was Theodore, but I don't remember off the top of my head now. The chance the Vegas player got was so low grade, because I think he was surprised that Dustin Wolf was there. I think that he was shocked that, how is this guy already there? How did he know what was happening? How could he anticipate? And it turned into a very low percentage shot right into the pads of Wolf, because he had nothing else to do. And I think that was a little surprising to the Vegas player. And it was an indication to me that his tracking, his reads, his anticipation, his positioning, and how in tune with the night he was on. And then obviously he made two or three 10-bellers in the third period to help preserve the comeback and the win. So, and obviously the Barbashev save. Kevin Woodley texted me on Thursday night. He just texted me, quote, he goes, now that's the Dustin Wolf I know, and then was raving about that breakaway save on Barbashev and how well he read the play. So I guess, long story short, Vix, I just wonder if you were a Dustin Wolf detractor or somebody who a little bit less sold on what he might be feels a little bit better about him after watching him on Thursday night.
I don't think I've ever been a Dustin Wolf detractor.
Was not a shot at you.
Okay, I'm going to get to Wolf in a second because now I've got beef with Kevin Woodley because I didn't get a text message and my feelings are now hurt. Back to Wolf. He looked like everything you've seen him at the WHL level and at the AHL level. He looked calm and quiet and patient in the net. His feet, he didn't have happy feet at all. He was doing little mini shuffles, getting himself square, getting himself set. He was squared almost every single shot. He didn't look spectacular in sort of the highlight reel sense outside of two or three saves, but that's because he arrived early, was set early, and was square. So sometimes goalies can go out there and you're like, oh, he's not having a very good game, or he's having just an okay game because he's not making the spectacular glove save, or he's not diving to knock a puck down. The quieter the game for a goalie that's facing some shots just shows you how prepped and on time he is to arrive for those shots. And a lot of that is his ability to anticipate the play. There's two things I think we would debate over what his best attribute is as a goalie. One is his speed. And the other is his hockey sense. And it's funny to talk about hockey sense in terms of a goalie. But yeah, you're constantly reading and reacting to every micro change on a rush coming down or a cycle in the zone. He is absolutely elite in his hockey sense. And it showed. Everything he wasn't against the San Jose Sharks in his previous start on February 15th, he was against the Golden Knights. Full marks for him. He gave the Flames life. He gave the Flames juice. And you talk about, yeah, they played a really strong game in front of them. That's absolutely true. But I think some of that can at least be attributed to the fact that he gave the team in front of him so much confidence because he was just so set, so prepared, so ready. He was absolutely 100% dialed in.
I was impressed and I was encouraged. I liked what I saw. The biggest stop that he had to make in the first 40 minutes was of his own doing.
Yeah.
After he kind of bobbled it behind the net and then got back and robbed Carlson on that diving save to save himself. Sportsnet showed a great graphic. I always have the Sportsnet kind of raw feed up to my left in the press box. And I just looked up to watch the replay. And before they got the replay, and you would have seen this on the telecast as well if you were watching, just the look of, through the mask, the look of, holy bleep, thank goodness, on Dustin Wolf's face.
And he literally said bleep, not cursing.
It's a very, him and Mark Scheifele, they just don't curse. And then, of course, the giveaway a few minutes later that led to the 1-0 goal. And you know what, poor Braden Pahal, that wasn't even a bad play. It was just poor execution. It happens. He was actually making the right read. I thought Mick explained it really well on Thursday's postgame show. But like when you're under pressure at that spot, your read in this zone coverage is to get it to your center iceman. Center iceman was in the right spot, just Pahal kind of fluffed it. And instead of it going to the center, it went to Theodore and then on to Mantha.
And
so
didn't have
it was the right play.
And didn't have the support coverage after the fact on a breakdown like that because you're not anticipating it as a teammate when you're trying to orchestrate the breakout. You're not going to be in the position to eliminate that pass or take away that pass. So, I mean, that one was what it was, but still a darned good performance from the 22-year-old.
And then, obviously, the stop on Barbashev that leads to the game winner, the stop a few minutes later that leads to the Coronado goal.
That Barbashev one, though, was the game.
Absolutely. And just the way that he stuck with it, and Barbashev did everything he could to beat a goalie. Like, there were multiple shifts and stick handles, and Wolf stuck with it the entire way.
Yeah, I was going to say, you would have heard Wolf talk about it post-game where he's like, yeah, I just kept stick handling, so I just stayed with him and then made the save. 13 seconds later, you have the lead.
I don't think it's that easy, though. Now, having never played the position, I wouldn't know, but Feels like,
well, it goes back to that patience that Kevin Woodley was talking about on Thursday.
And exactly. It feels like a lot of guys may not have, and I'm not saying a lot of NHL goalies, but just a lot of goalies, period. You know, one of those moves from Barbashev might have got somebody else to bite, and good on Wolf for not biting and sticking with it the entire way. Huh, get it? Wolf, bite? Haha, see what I did there?
Who are you, me?
I didn't even mean to do that, and I did. So I guess I just wonder on the text line, 960-960, if you were a Wolf non-believer, if you were a, or if your confidence in him had been shaken with some of his NHL outings this year, if that helped at all. I can tell you that my belief and my opinion on Wolf hasn't changed one bit all season long. I believe, and I believe this after the San Jose game, and I believe this at the exact same level after the game on Thursday against Vegas, which were two drastically different outings for Wolf. I still believe that we're talking about an elite goaltending prospect, one of the top prospects in the organization, the best goaltending prospect the Flames have had in decades, and a guy that they need to give every piece of runway to try to see if he can be a full-time NHL starter, if he can be an NHL number one. And that's not going to be determined in spot start NHL duty in his 22-year-old
right.
season. It's not going to be determined next year if he's part of a tandem. It's going to take years to determine whether or not Wolf is that, and he needs those years to develop into what he's going to be. And so I still believe the ceiling is extremely high. I still believe he is going to get to that ceiling, and I still believe that the Flames need to do everything in their power to try to get him there. And so I just felt like Thursday was more of an example of what he's capable of, whereas the San Jose start, I think, was an example of what happens when a smaller goalie is not set and is not smooth and is not reading it properly. Then it becomes really easy to beat him, which is why he's going to need more games like Thursday right. going forward. That's your Captain Obvious moment of the day.
No, but it's still a very important point that you bring up, whether you look at his body of work this season prior to Thursday night's game against Vegas, or you look at Vegas in isolation. Neither are adequate sample sizes to draw any conclusions as to what Wolf is at the NHL level. Now, you can point to certain games or certain plays and go, this is what his potential looks like. But the difference is what you are versus what your potential is when you're a 22-year-old goalie as a rookie in the NHL. And depending on games played, I imagine he's going to be a rookie next season as well.
What's the threshold for 20, goalie?
20 okay. or 25? I don't know off the top of my head, but it's somewhere in that ballpark.
It's 25 for a skater. I just don't know what it is for a goalie.
It's...
Anyway.
It can't be lower than 20, I wouldn't think.
We digress. Nice.
He has shown through glimpses like the game against Vegas that yes, he has the potential to be a number one goalie for all the things that we've already talked about in that start, but you can't draw full-on conclusions until you get a larger sample size.
I think it's just 25 for goalies and players, so goalies and skaters rather. So I don't think he's going to hit that this year. I
can't imagine.
I don't even think
is it mathematically possible?
Mathematically not possible. I
no,
don't think
it is.
What how many appearances has he made this year?
He's up to 8 appearances.
And there's only 16 games left.
So 24.
Yeah.
Look at that. We can do math on the fly on Flames Talk.
Mathematically not Woo! Possible for him to hit the Calder Trophy cutoff this year. I just encouraging. And look, I don't think there's any doubt that they need to have a spot for him next year at the NHL level. And
agreed.
Not a spot with three goalies. He needs to be a part of an NHL tandem all season long next year. And that doesn't mean he's got to start 50 games. That doesn't mean that he has to be the number one. Let's say they don't move Jacob Markstrom and they do end up moving Dan. Well, then Jacob's still the number one and he's still getting 50, 55 games. And then you give the rest to Wolf. And the upside on that is Wolf gets his NHL playing time And he's also practicing and taking NHL shots, and a lot of them as the guy in the backups net and the guy who works late and all that type of stuff. He's getting a lot of work from NHL caliber shots every single day. I think there's upside in it, period. And I think for him as a 23-year-old goalie next year, it would be time to go from playing all the time in the American League to playing a little bit less, but practicing with NHLers all the time. I think that step is next year. The important thing to remember is that he is not waiver eligible next year. He is still waiver exempt next year. But that should not determine the way, in my opinion, that should not be a factor at all in terms of how the Flames go about managing him. I think that, honestly, they probably should have had a spot open for him earlier this season, but it didn't transpire that way, and you understand that. But they'll have the time and the runway to make it happen next season. I think he should be one half of the tandem next year.
I know that we're in a time where everybody wants everything immediately, but I am fully on board with the UC Saros development plan that the Nashville Predators used. Applied to Dustin Wolf, and you look at the starts, his first full NHL season, Saros had 21 games, season after 26, 31, 40, and then 36 before becoming the full-time starter and unseating Pekka Rinne. And again, I know we all want Dustin Wolf to be the number one goalie for the Calgary Flames at age 23, but having a longer runway and having him adapt and learn over a larger body of work, I think benefits him longer term, and I think it benefits the Flames longer term. It's just a matter of how you go about it, who's going to be the tandem partner, because I believe that that is important as well. I think Pekka Rinne was absolutely integral to UC Saros' development, so I'm in favor of, and it's not just because they both happen to be smaller goalies. I just think that it makes sense from a profile standpoint that we don't go too quickly to Dustin Wolf should be the number one goalie and he should be playing 65 games for the Calgary Flames and so on and so forth. I think it really behooves his development if you pair him with a veteran and sort of bring him in along the way.
And whether that's Markstrom or somebody else,
right.
I'm with you 100% on that front. Let's get to the text line at 960-960. Dan and Cochran says, Wolf is an RFA this year, right? Do you gamble and go long-term, or do you play it safe with a two-year bridge? I don't think that you can, and not to say, like, you know me, I'm usually more in favor of a long-term deal if you can get it. I just don't think that that's the way you go with a guy with, what, at the end of the year, at most, he'll have 25 NHL appearances. That is at the very mathematical most.
Yep.
He'll probably, when it's all said and done, have like 12 or 13 NHL games. I'm not ready to go long-term yet. I would be going two-year bridge just to get you through the next couple seasons, and then you can really start to evaluate what you've got after that. And again, he'll still be 24, 25 when he's eligible for an extension, when he starts to become eligible for an extension.
Well, and I may be proven wrong in this next statement, so file it away in the archives just in case, but I don't think after a two-year bridge, he's going to be able to command a massive, like, 6x6 or anything like that. Again, who knows? He could emerge and he could
I mean, if he goes, if
like
he goes
go nuts.
A, if he goes on a Devin Dubnyk or Jordan Binnington type run, then he might.
Right. But even under the development plan, again, I don't know what the Flames have targeted for him for next season, but if he's in the neighborhood of 35 starts over those two seasons.
But what if, and again, we're getting
it's a great what if.
But what if it's 35 starts next year and then the next year it's, that might be closer to 35 might be the plan, but all of a sudden he's playing so well, he just usurps whoever is with him in the tandem, and next thing he's at 55 starts, and you're just like, damn, this guy.
Then pay that man his money.
Yeah.
You'd be, if you have a goalie that you're willing to pay that you've developed through your own organization that you can go max term on, your goal, and you're that confident in him, and he's done this because he's done it at the WHL level, he's done it at the AHL level,
yeah.
And he would have had enough body of work to prove that he can do it at the NHL level, pay the man.
This reads, Fubar Terry's been howling before howling was cool. Wolf coming here was destiny. That comes from Emerson from the Valley. And I just pulled this up. You can't see on podcast or radio. However, I've got this picture.
It's exactly what you think.
From September of 2014. That's me at the Ship Regulars Party. And they had Fubar Terry in full character, just going around and awooing with everybody. And that's
such a good movie. Such a good movie.
You know, I still have never seen Fubar 2.
Oh,
Fubar
the 2? 2.
But everybody tells me it's a great Christmas movie, so it's on the list for this coming Christmas. This from Wedley. Says, mine's been the same since day one on Wolf. He'll be fine. These no patience fans who panic at everything need to take a chill pill. For Brent Cron, the threshold was his draft. To quote Bill, what a first round bust. I don't think he's a first round bust. Croner's a late bloomer. That's all. Cannon Red Deer says, Wolf just needs time to develop and will only be as good as the team in front of him. New defense, everyone's learning. This says, I wasn't ready to write him off after the San Jose game, but it did get me a little worried. But after yesterday, pretty sure that was just an off game and nowhere near the real Dustin Wolf. This reads, I think Dustin will be just fine. They need to string a few starts together for him now. This says, Pat, your howl sounds like Scooby-Doo. Well, yeah, it'll get better as I move closer. I'm not even going to try again. Mike writes, why are we giving such praise to Wolf? He's an unproven AHL caliber goalie with no net presence. My son covers more net and he's 12. I did respond back saying he did just shut down the defending cup champs. Is your 12-year-old ready to do that? With no disrespect, of course, is what I said.
No disrespect to the 12-year-old.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mike just wrote back, you know the truth. Okay.
Are the truth is out there. Like, do we need to queue up an X-Files?
Are
here?
You offering me a red pill or a blue pill? I don't understand what you're getting at, Mike.
Are you Neo in this?
No, I could never be Neo. Are you kidding me? If I got that offer, I'd be like, yeah, give me the ignorance is bliss. I'm out of here. What person with as little chutzpah as me is going to take the pill where you have to experience reality? I'm going right back to the Matrix all day, every day. There you go. That's our look inside hockey for Calgary Co-op. Let's go local Calgary. From best from the West Canadian produce to quality only Alberta meats, find your local at Calgary Co-op. Shop online or in store today. Well, that was, you know, Wolf aside, that was a really quality response from the Flames on Thursday night. I give them a lot of credit. And you could tell from puck drop that they were a different hockey team than the team that played the last three games. You know, from puck drop on Tuesday, they were second best. From puck drop on Sunday, they were second best. And from puck drop in the second period on Saturday, they were second best. It was eight straight periods of them being completely manhandled. And I just thought, like, you hear this from Blake Coleman postgame on Thursday, the Flames may not always win when they play to their structure and play consistent and stick with it for 60. Sometimes they might get beat. Hell, I thought that loss to Seattle last Monday, the game where Pospisil ran done, I thought the Flames did a pretty good job of sticking with their structure and playing well and being disciplined and keeping the details, all that type of stuff. And they got beat by Seattle, who's a good team too, right? Like, that'll happen sometimes. But at the very least, when you stick to your structure, you give yourself a chance. And the Flames and their leadership group specifically knew that going into Thursday's game against Vegas. This was Blake Coleman postgame.
It was an embarrassing 72 hours for our team. And, you know, we're maybe didn't handle a response to losing some guys and some friends. Maybe wasn't the best. And we got slapped pretty hard for not showing up and being our best. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, if you got pride and you get beat up like that, you better respond or you don't really belong in this league. So, you know, we've got a lot of guys that we're not happy with, like I said, with the last few games, and everybody stepped up and was much better and was who we expect them to be. And you know, the young guys played well as well and get a big goal from Maddie and nice play from Muncy there too. So, like I said, I thought to a man it was better.
So an embarrassing 72 hours, as Blake Coleman said, and I just give that group of leaders a lot of credit. And I mean, in the end, they just did what they were paid to do. Like, hey, you're a leader. You wear a letter. You are one of the higher paid players on this team. It's your job to go out there and set the example and lead the way. And that hadn't happened for the last three games, but they got challenged. They got challenged public-ish from Ryan Huska, as you know, critical as Husk's going to be publicly. And he told us post game that he took seven of the leaders aside leading up to the game and had a chat with them. And you know what? You know who drove the bus? It was Coleman. It was Backlund. It was Kadri. It was Uyghur. Like the leaders on that team drove the bus on Thursday and were the biggest reason why they won that hockey game.
Yeah, we talked a lot on Thursday about the players were saying the right thing, and there was some pushback on the text line about, well, what else do you think they're going to say? But it wasn't so much what they were saying. It was the tone and the demeanor of how they were handling it. It wasn't lip service and saying, we need to be better. We need to lead. It starts with me, so on and so forth. And in that Coleman clip, there's still accountability after that performance, after that win where Calgary was so good. And that's the type of leadership you need when you're in a tough stretch, when you're entering the dog days of the season where, yeah, your odds of making the playoffs aren't necessarily as high as you want, but you still have to go out there and give it all you have for the reasons that you just mentioned. There was accountability before the game. There was accountability after the game. And that's 100% what you need out of your leadership group right now.
Yeah. Good on them. And, you know, that's the professional pride that we've been talking
about. Great phrase.
And they showed it. And don't look now. You know, the Flames needed a response like that. Not for the playoff push. The playoff push, whatever. It is what it is. They've got slim chances. Wedley was asking on the text line, what are their chances? They went from 2.2 to 3.6, I believe it was, over at Money Puck.
With a regulation win against the team that they're trying to catch.
So the playoff chase is whatever. If they win the requisite games to make it interesting, then we'll be dialed in on it once again. And I'm not saying that you shouldn't be cheering for it at all. You know, Wedley and a few other of our regular Texers are all in on it. Like, hey, they're going to do it. They're going to. Good. Awesome. And I hope that they're right, because, you know, if they get within 4 points again, we'll be talking about it again. For now, they're 8 out and there's only 16 games to go. Their elimination number is low, all that type of stuff. But Vegas, woof. For a team that is in no means, or by no means, cemented in a playoff spot, that was about as lacking urgency a night as you could possibly imagine. I mean, aside from Eichel, who wasn't great, but looked like he was engaged. Eichel, I don't know, Aiden Hill, few others. It just, that was a listless performance. And they're only 4 up on Minnesota with 2 head-to-head meetings with the Wild still to go. Like, Vegas is precariously sitting in a playoff spot all of a sudden.
I want to apologize to you because I should have sent you Bruce Cassidy post-game, because he was, I don't even know what adjective does it justice. So I'm just going to read a couple of the quick lines that he had post-game. Yeah. I'd like to see them have some urgency and realize it's not automatic that we're going to get a chance to repeat. You have to earn your way in. We're not playing well enough right now to assure that. If you're losing playing well, you say, okay, that's just hockey some nights. There has to be recognition at some point. The clock is ticking. We're okay today, but who knows next week. If this sort of attitude doesn't change, we can't play half a game and expect to win. And that was probably, there was 2 or 3 quotes that he tossed out post game. One of them was also, and I'm going to paraphrase this one because I don't have it up. We talk about having a good leadership group.
Yeah.
It's time to grab someone by the shirt at this point. That is the defending Stanley Cup champion head coach just signaling alarm bells to me. Post game against the Calgary Flames, Vegas might want to get it together a little bit.
And I know they're injured, but injury or no injury, they had a 1-0 lead after 40, even if they weren't full marks for that 1-0 lead, and they showed no urgency in trying to close that hockey game out. And that's not taking anything away from the Flames at all. I'm just saying, Vegas, in their situation as the defending Stanley Cup champions, that was yuck, and they need to figure it out, or they're going to get caught. It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you on this hour of Flames Talk. We're coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio. Wet basement? They have a lasting solution to keep your basement dry. If you experience any water in your basement, contact Basement Systems. They're all things basement-y. Visit dlbasementsystems.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Time now for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hill. Step one, car show. Step two, take your grin and head over to the Mercedes-Benz Country Hills 75 vehicle showroom. Just 20 minutes from the Car and Truck Show. It's Steinberg, Aaron Vickers of NHL.com, and now the voice of the Calgary Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Friday Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, big insurance goal from Matt Coronato on Thursday in a 4-1 win over Vegas. Great play by Dryden Hunt, who had a hell of a game. Hunt does a lot of the work, but I don't know how many guys on the roster finish that the way Coronato does. Like, he goes bar down and does it from, you know, because it was such a hardworking play from Hunt, it wasn't a pinpoint perfect pass. Coronato kind of had to adjust, and he still went upstairs bar down to make it 3-1. And so it just got me thinking. He's been back with the team since that road trip where they started in Tampa Bay. I'm just curious kind of what we have seen from Matt Coronato and what our observations have been from him on this most recent recall that maybe would be a little bit different than what we've seen earlier at the NHL level this season.
Well, the one thing that jumps out to me when I watch Matt Coronato is his work ethic. The guy works his tail off, game in, game out. I think what has surprised me, because he's been a goal scorer and point producer at every level, is prior to last night, I actually thought he was better defensively than offensively. And that probably has something to do with his work ethic. But, you know, last night we saw that elite shot that he has, and he was almost down on one knee when he released that puck, and it still went right into the roof of the Golden Knights net. It was a great shot. And I said in the two or three games leading up to Thursday night's game against the defending Stanley Cup champions that I wondered what a goal would do for Matt Coronato and for his confidence offensively at the NHL level. And it was good to see him put himself in positions to shoot the puck last night, because I think that's the one thing that he struggled with. There's less time, there's less space at the NHL level than there is at the AHL level. Clearly, he's learned how to produce in the American Hockey League, leads the Wranglers in goals and points, but it's been more of a struggle for him at the National Hockey League level. But in Thursday's game against the Golden Knights, he had four shots on goal. One of them went in, and I thought he was good with and without the puck. So for me, and I don't remember every second of every game and how every player performed in all the games this season, but for me, that's the most memorable offensive performance for Matt Coronato so far this season. And now that he's got the monkey off his back, his first goal in 18 games and his second career NHL goal, I wonder if that maybe frees him up a little bit, takes some weight off his shoulders, and we start to see the type of player we were expecting to see. It's taken a little bit longer, but sometimes it does with young guys.
Yeah, Willsey, I think the only other game I would point to might have been his NHL debut last season, where he had five or six shots and was absolutely buzzing, but certainly he was running off pure adrenaline at that point, playing his first NHL game. So in terms of
this, a terrible team and a meaningless game.
Fair enough. I digress. You're absolutely right on all those points. That goal was a goal scorer's goal against Vegas. That was exactly patented Matt Coronato in terms of his shot, in terms of his release. That's what he did at the USHL level with Chicago. That's what he did at the NCAA level with Harvard. That's what we've seen him do with the Wranglers in the AHL. So it's nice to see that translate to the NHL a little bit. I think it's been a challenge for him at times offensively. I feel like this was one of his stronger games in the NHL, as we both kind of agree. For me, there have been bouts of inconsistency or bouts of absences in terms of his offensive impact on this latest recall. But like you, I've liked some of the things we've seen him do either in the defensive zone or in the neutral zone in terms of his checking, in terms of his compete. But at the end of the day, he's going to be judged on production. And that was just his strongest game this season for sure on the offensive front for me.
Just to me, guys, he just looks a little bit more comfortable with all of what goes into the NHL day-to-day lifestyle this time around. And specifically, there have been, I mean, some of the games that he's had since the, so he had his longest run in the NHL was obviously when he made the team out of camp, and what, he played right up until the early November. I think November 1st was his last game before he went down and started his time in the American League. And as that continued, and I know it sounds weird because it's early on, but he looked fatigued. And he looked like a guy that was hitting a little bit of a wall with everything that goes into playing an NHL schedule, dating all the way back to all his games in the preseason and at the Young Stars in BC. And it just looked like as that went along, the energy levels, I think, were hitting a little bit of a wall. And since that time, he's only come up and kind of spot duty. He's come up for a game or two and then gone back down. And in those games, it's kind of just been ineffective. This time, he's been up for a few games in a row. And one of the things I've noticed, even in the games when the Flames have been dreadful here against Carolina, against Colorado, against Florida, you can still see that the energy level is high and that the work ethic, to your point, Wilsey, the work ethic when the energy level's where it needs to be and he's feeling it, the work ethic shines through that much more. So that's kind of been the thing that I have noticed the most, is that he's able to let his work shine through even more because we're not talking about a fatigued player. And that sounds crazy in March, but when you adjust and when you get the routine down and when it just clicks in terms of how you got to take care of yourself after games, how you got to take care of yourself going into games, off days, all that type of stuff, when you just adjust to it, I think your body and your mental state adjust to it as well. And I just feel like he is a little bit more comfortable with the overall package that goes into being an everyday professional player. So good on him. And that was to Vic's point, Derek, that was a goal scorer's goal on Thursday night.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think you're onto something, Pat, because the jump from the junior schedule to the pro schedule is, I think, easier than the jump from the college schedule to the pro schedule, because you're practicing way more and playing way less at the college level than you are at the AHL or the NHL level. So that can take guys a little bit of time to get used to. And I do think he's looking more comfortable, more confident. But for me, it's about him finding those soft spots. It's about him finding the time and the space to use his greatest weapon, which is his shot. Clearly, he's figured that out at the AHL level. And I'm hoping that Thursday night was the start of him figuring that out at the NHL level. It's tough to score goals if you don't shoot the puck. He had zero shots in the previous two games. Not going to score. He had four shots in last night's game, and one of them went in. So I think a big step in the right direction. And I also think that playing with a bit more confidence offensively can help any player, and certainly can help a young player. And, you know, it's funny. New look line combinations last night, and I wasn't sure what to make of them. I was excited to see them. I've got to give Dryden Hunt a lot of credit. Doesn't seem to matter who he plays with, how much ice time he gets. He finds a way to be an impactful player, as he was in Thursday night's game with a couple of assists, including one on the Matt Coronado goal. And then Yegor Sharangovich just keeps on trucking, and he's having a great season. So hopefully for Matt Coronado, a great start Thursday night, and bigger and better things to come as he tries to force the Flames to keep him on the NHL roster for the rest of the season.
Just to quickly run through Matt Coronado's workload in his first season as a pro, he played 3 games in Penticton, 6 preseason games, 20 with the Flames, 40 with the Wranglers. He's at 69 to date. Last year at this time, he would have been floating around 34, played 45 in total because he did play his NHL debut and did get 10 games in with Team USA at the World Championship. So total of 45 last year. The World Championship was a month removed from his game in the NHL, by the way. So he's already at 69 versus roughly around 34 at this time last year.
Nice. That's our... This is our Daily Flames Roundtable. I'm sorry, I'm a child. Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Friday. Guys, so Matt Coronado scores one of Calgary's goals in the 4-1 win over Vegas on Thursday. The other two goal scorers were Yegor Sharangovich and Blake Coleman, as their fun little shot-for-shot contest continues in terms of who's going to finish this season as the team's leading goal scorer. Sharangovich ties the game to get to 28, which was 2 clear of Coleman, and then Coleman scores 2 of the next 3, including the one that seals it into the empty net and the game winner, and he moves into a tie again with Sharangovich at 28. So Well, they're both going to hit 30, which is super neat. Be a couple of first-time 30-goal scorers, and that's a really cool thing for both Yegor and Blake. But let's go back to September. Let's go back to early October before the puck dropped on the regular season. If I were to ask you then, hey, who do you think is going to be the leading goal scorer on the Calgary Flames this year? How far down would you have gone? And this is not a knock on these guys. It just speaks to how cool it is to see both of them where they are. How long would you have gone to get to Coleman or to get to Sharon Govich as your leading goal scorers for the coming season?
Blake Coleman would have been a ways down the list for me. Yegor Sharangovich would have been closer to the top because he had 24 goals in his sophomore season with the Devils. And I know he took a step back in his third season, but I don't think he was given the opportunity in New Jersey that I believe that he was going to get and has gotten in Calgary. So I thought there was a chance that he had a bounce back season, and he certainly has, but he wouldn't have been at the top of my list. In no particular order, I probably would have said Elias Lindholm, Nazem Kadri, Andrew Mangiapane, maybe even Jonathan Huberdeau would have more goals than certainly Blake Coleman and probably Yegor Sharangovich. I'm not sure what the parlay would have paid to have both guys leading the team or tied for the team lead and to get to 30 goals in the season. But it's been a great year for both guys. And both guys have done quite a bit of heavy lifting as well, especially since moving to center in Sharangovich's case. But Coleman's played primarily on the right side of a line with Michael Blackland and for the last little while, Andrew Mangiapane, which has been the Flames' shutdown line and getting the really tough matchups on a nightly basis. So both guys deserve a ton of credit. Now, I know a bunch of Coleman's goals have come into the empty net, but with that said, he's earned that ice time late in games because he's so defensively responsible that Ryan Huska feels comfortable putting him out there, protecting a one or two goal lead late. And he's getting those opportunities because he's earned them. So they definitely would have been at the top of my list. Sharangovich would have been higher on my list than Coleman, but hey, a tip of the cap to both guys.
Yeah, I'm with you here, Wilsey. Sharangovich, I would believe more than Coleman, not to disrespect Blake at all, but he's having a career year at age 32, and he's been a kind of a set-and-forget 2020 guy over the course of the past four or five seasons. I certainly didn't see the offensive explosion coming from Blake Coleman. On the Sharangovich front, you mentioned, Wilsey, yeah, he had the 24 goals two seasons ago, and he only played 76 games that season, so really it was a 26-goal pace over a full 82-game slate. The hope was when the Calgary Flames acquired him in exchange for Tyler Toffoli that he would be able to bounce back to that sort of figure. He had 13 last season, 24 as we mentioned the season before. He's now done that and more, and that's a tip of the cap or a feather in the cap to Craig Conroy and the Flames pro scouting group to identify a player that was underutilized, to identify a player that you thought still had more, especially given the age range where he's only 25. So if I were to jot down my preseason list of Flames goal scorers, yeah, I would have had Lindholm. I would have had Kadri. Sharangovich, I would have put probably third, but that's more of a hope than a declaration. And then you can layer down a couple more names. You mentioned Mangiapane being one. I'm not sure exactly where Blake Coleman comes out. Probably would have been somewhere behind Mangiapane, but ahead of Backlund just in terms of his line. But just what he's given you, whether it's been the goals, whether it's been the penalty killing, the defense, the 200-foot game, the leadership, Blake Coleman is giving full value for the contract he's on right now for the Calgary Flames.
I wouldn't have had either of them in my like group that could have done it. And that's not a knock.
That's a fair way to phrase it too. Could have done it.
But especially watching, I mean, Coleman is just having a breakout season. Coleman has had good years before, and he's been a productive player before, but 30 goals, that's a, especially for a guy who is in his early 30s, you know, that you don't usually get to your first 30-goal season in your early 30s. And he had a couple of 20-goal seasons while he was still with New Jersey, but you know, this is a new level for Blake. So I didn't see that, and that's with the knowledge that, you know, he talked very openly about how much better he felt coming into this year, felt far closer to 100% than he had in prior years because of some of the nagging things he got to take care of with a non-playoff year last year and a longer summer. But I still didn't see 30 coming. And Sharangovich, when I watched him at training camp, I was just kind of like, oh boy, I don't know what the Flames have. Excuse me. Like, I looked at it and I said to myself, okay, there's obviously something here. He's a good skater. He's smart. He's a good penalty killer. But you didn't see much confidence at all. You didn't see a fit for him. They tried him on the Huberdeau line with Lindholm. Then they had him on another line. Eventually, early on, he was centering the fourth line. You're just like, okay, you know, what is Sharon Govich going to be here? And then all of a sudden, in November, it started to pop. And since it started to pop, he's been one of their most consistent offensive players. And to both your points, has really done a nice job of proving Craig Conroy and the pro scouting staff right here. So I just, going into the season, I wouldn't have had either of them in my group where I'm like, oh, yeah, this guy might be the leading scorer. Because Backlund, Mangiapane, Lindholm, Kadri, Huberdeau, absolutely. All those guys would have been much closer to that group, and yet here we are. Good on them both. It's been a couple of really cool stories, and I'm curious how much this little competition drags on for with 16 games to go.
All right. So 16 games to go. Who ends up as the leader at the end of the season? Will it be Blake Coleman or Yegor Sharangovich or someone else?
I would go Sharangovich myself. But it's a legit debate to be having right now.
I'm going to go Coleman just because he's the empty net assassin. I'm going to go Coleman just because. And that's not a knock on Blake at all, because he did score the game winner against Vegas with a goalie in net. And as he said many times when he's kind of been razzed about being out there for some empty netters, Willsie, he's out there for the empty netters because when the other team has pulled their goalie, here's your second rocket science moment of the hour. That means you're protecting a lead. And what right winger are you going to have out there protecting a lead every single time? The guy who wears 20. So it speaks to the reliability and the trust level that exists in Blake. So that's not a knock on him at all. But because he's always out there shutting things down, and that empty net is always open for him, and he's been pretty good with the empty cage. I'm going to go Blake. Blake by a smidge.
Yeah, he's earned that ice time, and he's earned those empty netters. I'll break the tie. I'm going to go with Sharangovich. Just having chatted with Ryan Huska about his release and how deceptive it is, and watching him get more comfortable and confident playing center since the shift from right wing, I just think the sky's the limit for this guy. He just keeps getting better and better. His 200-foot game is fantastic. Even when he's not chipping in offensively, he's good defensively. And he's getting first-unit power play time. So I'll go with Sharangovich. But, boy, a tip of the cap to Coleman because, again, for him to have a career year at his age and playing the tough minutes that him and Backlund have played, that's pretty impressive.
At the ancient age of 32, I don't even know how he... How does he get to the rink without a walker? Let me tell you.
Please don't.
Hey.
We're all older than him.
I am the least older than him.
I'm the least older.
Yeah, I'm the oldest. I'm 132, or I feel like it.
I don't know how you get to the rink either, to be you geezer. Okay. This is going to go off the rails if we don't end it right now. Have a good rest of your Friday, Willsie. We will, and you're not that old. You're like in your early 40s. You look like you're still in your 20s. We will see you at the rink on Saturday for an early start against the Habs in one of the parties of the year at the Dome. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, A, thank you. B, it's always fun when the Habs come to town, especially on a Saturday night. And you guys know I don't like early starts. 5 o'clock's just about perfect on a Saturday night. I got enough time to get my prep done tomorrow, get to the rink, get settled in, call what I hope will be a good hockey game, and we'll see if the Flames can win a second straight. We'll see you guys tomorrow.
All right, thank you, Willsie. There's Derek Wills, Aaron Vickers, Pat Steinberg, Daily Flames Roundtable. And the best part, we don't get this very often. We get the late hockey night start. And what I mean by that is we get the 5:16. Because usually the early window game start at 16 after. We don't get that very often. So a longer pregame, I'm looking forward to it. A 5:16 coast-to-coast on Hockey Night and City TV for the Flames and Habs. It'll be a fun night at the Dome, regardless of both teams' playoff positioning right now. Neither team sitting pretty for a playoff spot. But Does not matter. You could be talking about 31 versus 32. If the Habs are in town, it is a raucous atmosphere at the Dome.
Yeah, it's one of those rare games where there's, I don't want to say equal amount of Flames fans as opposition, but with an original six team like Montreal coming in, they'll make their presence known.
Yeah, for sure. He's Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Azam and Shan have been our producers this hour. That'll wrap things up on our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Step one, car show. Step two, take your grin and head over to the Mercedes-Benz Country Hills 75 vehicle showroom. Just 20 minutes from the Car and Truck Show.